what Rubio said was, oh, you know, we do deep strikes too because it's going to bring Russia to the table. And then flip side of that, which they seem to ignore, you've got Peskov, who's the spokesman for Vladimir Vladimirovich, twice has said this is a war. This is no longer a military operation. This is a war. It's true. One hasn't been declared. But then you got Semenyan, who's head of RT, in an interview to Deutsche Welle, just basically said the same thing. It's like, look, you want war, you're going to get war. They're not taking the hint.
No, because they have no option. There is no option.
What about national forces? I mean, from the people. I'm pretty sure most of the people don't want to go to war. They rarely ever
No.
do.
But I don't know because I'm not in Europe. I don't know how effective the anti-Russia hysteria is. I don't know how much of the European population buys it and so forth. Here in the United States, the war in Iran is remarkable because the majority of Americans state that they don't want it, and they did from the first day. It's really a different, very different situation in this country.
But it's where do you see the US heading? Oh, and the Europeans for that matter too, because we've got this on and off, on and off, on and off. I guess that's the new norm for the Straits of Hormuz. But what normally you'd have 20 million barrels leaving every single day. Just through the Straits of Hormuz are now down to maybe 10 million barrels once a week. So where you had 140, you're now down to 10. The U.S. imports a lot of fuel, both as crude and as processed fuel. And Europe is, you know, it's absolutely dependent, has very little of its own. But the markets
Well,
aren't responding, I don't think. Not to the severity of it, anyways.
not yet, not yet. They're confident that Mr. Trump will find a way out of this situation, even though it looks like at this point he doesn't have one. But you do have to remember that he doesn't, and the people around him are not your normal Western capitalist leadership. These are extreme right-wing businessmen. That's what this is. And they have made a lifetime of believing that American power was always supreme, and anything that looked like a defeat was only because a weak leadership did not make use of the military power that it had. So for them, Mr. Trump has to look like he's mobilizing and using military power. So he has to go back and bomb Iran some more. And so he is going to do that. And my guess, if you're asking that, my guess is he'll do some more bombing. He'll make a big point of how much destruction they have achieved in Iran. That will be half true and half not true. And then he will claim, as he already is, that the Iranians want to make a deal just to get him to stop. And he will make a deal from a position of strength, having bombed them a lot. And he will hope that the American media and the public opinion will look the other way. It didn't work for him with the memorandum of understanding he signed a few days ago. I hoped that would work. But there he agreed to do things that were crystal clear in his mind he would never do. He always does it. He doesn't believe in, you said that the Putin is a lawyer. Well, Trump is not a lawyer. He
No, he's
doesn't
not.
know, does not know or care about any of that. He likes to do things because he's powerful enough to get them done. And so he'll try that. He has to do that because if you know about oil, you'll know there's a difference between what they call sour oil and what they call sweet oil. It has to do with the sulfur in it and stuff like that. The United States, while it has an enormous amount of sweet oil, has a refining apparatus that depends on sour oil. And sour oil is what we get from the Middle East.
And
So even the
Venezuela.
United States and Venezuela.
Yeah.
And the United States is not self-sufficient in that at all. So it too will have a problem with rising prices. But if Mr. Trump can achieve the following, either mobilize the country around a war, hasn't done that yet, but he might, or cancel the elections that are now scheduled for the first week of November. If he doesn't have to face a vote, he has a good bit more freedom to have the prices go up and things like that, because there's nothing people can do. He and the people around him do not calculate mass political uprising because they've never seen that here. That's something that happens elsewhere. Example, they were very impressed, very, by what happened in Iran over the last 3 days of the funeral for Khamenei, the Ayatollah that they killed the first day. Watching tens of millions of people in the streets, which we all see here in the United States, that for them, that's the wild card. That's the unknown factor that we can't afford to ignore. They know that now, that Iran is weird for them, because Iran was supposed to collapse after 12 days last year.
True, true.
And then Iran was supposed to collapse after 2 months this year. And Iran didn't collapse, not even a little. And this is holding them back. They don't know what to do with that. But they're going to try to see if it collapses, maybe coming around the corner, if they can just bomb a few more cities and a few more infrastructure. And he has to do that in any case. Whether he thinks it'll work or not, he has to do that for the domestic audience. The right wing here wants to see bombing. They do not want to see giving the Iranians reparations or giving the Iranians a relief of sanctions. They don't want any of that. You may be able to get away with it, but then you have to have bombing as the compensation. I wish I didn't have to talk like that, but that is the way the political game is played here. Very, very, very dangerous.
What can they
And
do
if
as a
you
pretext?
get the idea, one last point. If the
I'm sorry,
Americans,
sir.
oh no, if the Americans get the idea that Europe actually could carve up Russia in a war, they will not stand in the way. And my guess is they will help the Europeans, just in the way that they help the Ukrainians.
They've been trying to do that to us since 1012 AD. And almost every two generations, they come over like lemmings, and then we have to bury them. I don't know
You
why,
know,
but.
I tell that to my American audiences. I tell them the history of the world is not about Russia invading Europe. It's the other way around. It's Napoleon, it's Kaiser Wilhelm, it's Adolf Hitler. That's what,
Oh,
they all
Charles the
came
Great, and on and on and on.
from.
No, quite literally, the first big invasion came in 1012 AD. It was Boleslav Hrabry, the Prince of Krakow, and his Holy Roman Empire allies, and they invaded Kiev, where Saint Vladimir Krasna Solnsa, who Christianized Russia, was sitting. I mean, they grabbed it, but they couldn't hold it. That's the usual thing. They got too far in. It was still a big country even then.
Yes.
And they got pushed out. But after that, it's just been on. It's like every couple of generations, let's go east. Go east, young man. But okay, so I don't think Trump's going to get the crowds for backing a war. This, from what I've read, this war is more unpopular than Vietnam, and Vietnam got to be that unpopular. It didn't just begin like that. This one from day one. But what could he use as a
What
what
will
could he?
hold them back here is the fact that Europeans, they can't see it, but they ought to. Somewhere between half and two-thirds of the American people are in serious economic distress. Yes, they have a higher standard of living than many people around the world. That's true, they do. But it is under attack. It hasn't been rising now for quite some time, and there are serious threats on the horizon, and they are very worried about that. And what you will see is if Trump continues this war, is a growing chorus of politicians who will say, "Vote for us. The money being spent on war, we will instead spend on you. We will
It should
help
be that
you."
way.
And there's going to be I would guess, a groundswell of support for them. You might even see a spreading of what is already phenomenal. Here in New York, as I assume you know, we just elected a Muslim socialist to be the mayor, and he is incredibly popular. I am talking to you from New York City. All my neighbors voted for him, and they will vote for him again. They like him. He is talking only about what he is going to do for the people of New York. He's not giving an excuse not to do it. He's doing it. That could be doing more, yes, but he's doing it, and people are very grateful. And three more of them were elected this last primary the Democratic Party controls here. So if you win the primary in the Democratic Party, you're ipso facto in. So three more socialists won. Another one in Colorado, a woman, just the other day. So this is becoming serious. It's becoming serious because these are socialists who are basically what in Europe would be called social democrats. These are not communists. These are not anarchists. These are not even class conscious socialists. They are socialists in the European sense. They are people who are going to improve social welfare, who are going to create and fund a welfare state and all of that. But that's radical in this country. And that is now catching on. And that I had not, just so you know, living here all my life, I had not expected to live long enough to see it. And so I'm very impressed that I'm seeing it.
What could Trump do for a pretense to cancel elections? I mean, he's lost the majority of his base as it is. I mean, granted, the people that are left, quote, in MAGA are cult fanatics, but the majority of people that voted for Trump, he's backed out of every single promise he made to them, taking care of internal issues, ending the wars, quite the opposite. What could he do as a pretense?
Well, I'm afraid that the most likely is what is called here a false flag event, in which, I'll give you an example. When he stands up to speak and somebody shoots a gun and the bullet touches his ear and he has blood nicely on his face and he raises his fist, that would give him a lot of support for a short while. It wouldn't last very long, for a short while. You have to have something like that. The Mexican government, the private army that Trump created, called ICE, ICE here, has moved into Mexico without the permission
How?
and has been killing Mexicans on the grounds that they are drug traffickers. Well, under pressure from Mexican public opinion, the woman who runs Mexico, the leader of Mexico, has said that this has to stop. I don't know what's going to happen now. I don't know. He can't really stop. He doesn't get that. So he's going to realize that he's more powerful than Mrs. Sheinbaum in Mexico, and he's going to push that. I don't know what's going to happen. Canada is moving steadily toward deals with Europe, with Russia. Well, I don't know about Russia, but China and Europe, and I think they're open to deals with Russia. So he's losing them. They don't have much in the way of alliances anymore, and they're not reliable in that way. And the allies know that, and they're making deals somewhere else. Look, Mr. Carney in Canada is anti-labor, pro-capitalist, a profiteer. There's nothing attractive about him whatsoever, except he positions himself as the anti-Trump, and he wins the elections in Canada. Canada's economy is in very bad shape also. And he's not, he's trying to change labor laws to give the profiteer more freedom to make money. The unions are turning against him. He can't keep playing the anti-Trump card forever, although Trump helps him in that regard by making stupid comments all the time.
True, very true. Well,
I
what
mean,
about
I don't mean to depress you or your
no.
audience, but I don't want to be dishonest. I
Yeah.
find that the confluence of problems for Europe and the United States very frightening. And I think deluding yourself is a symptom of the difficulty. It's very attractive to believe that the tables have been turned, Ukraine is going to win. That's very comforting. Or Russia is falling apart, and the people are turning against Mr. Putin, or the economy is in trouble. Whatever. Saying this, saying it over and over again, having very little in the way of refutation when people argue against you, these are the signs of people that are in trouble, are in a lot of trouble.
Well,
I hope that the leadership in Russia understands this. I understand that they have their own difficult decisions to make, but I am frankly very, very worried. I see the build-up to World War I happening under new conditions, yes, but happening again.
very true, very true. Well, the drumbeat out of Europe is every day war, war, war. We're going to carve Russia up. We're going to chop it up. Everybody here hears that. That news, that's just everyday background noise that you hear from the Europeans. And then you get people like Stubb, who really I do think he's genetically deficient. He looks like it anyways. He comes out with, after saying all of this, after his nationalists come out with these new maps of the future Finnish Empire, all 6 million people are going to build this giant empire. Some of them are looking to, we're going to grab Kamchatka. Like, okay. I'm surprised you could spell it. I don't know where it's at. And then he comes out of, oh yeah, when this is all over, we'll just go back to business as usual with Russia. Like, no, gentlemen, it's not going to happen. And they, I think they're really under extreme delusions.
How Before we close, tell me, because my audiences would be interested, how do you assess where are the, I understand how difficult this question is, but where are the Russian people? How do they process what's going on?
Well, until 2022, most Russian people would have had sympathy for the Russians in the Donbas. For most Russian people, that was something over there. It was beyond the cordon. It was something. I sent aid to people because I've got family all over there. I've seen when the fighting first started in 2014. Me and a friend of mine, we took his van, filled it up with clothing, collected a bunch of money, and drove down to Rostov to a church warehouse to bring food and clothing. Because what was happening was the Ukrainian army would just start shooting at the Russian villages in eastern Ukraine in the middle of the night. People were grabbing their kids and running out in the middle of the night in their night clothes and running into the woods and the swamps, going east. And then 2, 3 days later, they show up in Rostov, disheveled, hungry, crying kids. They couldn't go to the official crossing points because the Ukrainians would shell the crossing point on the Ukrainian side. They tried shelling the Russian side, but they got a lot of response and artillery fire back. So they decided that was not a good idea. So they just shoot at the civilians on the Ukrainian side. Well, we brought, and I watched these people. The church was picking them up, feeding them, clothing them, and then sending them to the emergency services. People are putting them in the camps and then letting them, helping them find apartments and places to live in the rest of Russia while things are being settled out in the eastern territories. So you got to see that. I did, and some other people did, and I know some people that went and fought, but for the most part, it was over there. After that, it took a while for people to start catching on that, oh, this is existential. But I think the majority of people are looking at it as this is existential to Russia's survival. And that what amazed me, there were some of the Azov guys that were taken prisoner in Mariupol. They started testifying or told, they were told by Zelensky's government. And Zelensky, by the way, he may still be a Russian citizen, so he may be committing treason, because he had a Russian citizenship. He's got Israeli citizenship. He's got St. Kitts. He's got British citizenship. I mean, these guys, it's which passport do I pull out this time? They got an order to murder Russian POWs, mutilate them, take videos or pictures, because it'll break Russian morale. Like, well, if you lived amongst Russians, you know that has the exact opposite effect. It pisses people off. And every time they commit these kinds of acts, the number of volunteers just explodes, the number of volunteers signing up. So it has the exact opposite effect. Russians, my sensei once described Russians very correctly. If you go in a basement and it's full of stray cats and they're snapping at each other, they're all doing their own thing, it's not organized. That's Russia while it's at peace. But you kick one of those cats, and every single cat in that basement is now coming to kill you. And that's the point of Russia, too. It's like, you just leave us alone. We're on our own. We're doing our own thing. Just, whatever. But
How
as
old
soon.
is your son?
Oh, no, that was my sensei for when I was taking Shotokan. And I guess he's about 56, 57. My boy is much, much younger. He's still in school. But so yeah, so but that's Russian culture. Russians adapt. I mean, just to understand, you remember when the Muslim Brotherhood took over in Egypt and they had a little bit of a civil war there before the military came back and finally kicked them out? Sharm el-Sheikh, all these Egyptian resorts. Everybody ran away. The Russian tourists stayed. They're like, "Yeah, they're not shooting at us." This is the Russian mentality. It's like, it's hard to scare people. Like, yeah, there's drones flying overhead. They get pissed off, obviously, when the drones target homes, and they do kill people, absolutely, every day. But that just, I mean, a perfect example is Gorlovka or Yasinovata, where I have an aunt and uncle. They've been artillery attacked Well, Gorlovka is a prime example. I've been to Gorlovka. I've been down the road of death, where they've artilleryed the road and they used drones to kill civilians and cars. Me and two other guys were idiots in this big white van. I went and covered a strike on a market. Thank God the market was just opening up, because it was just one guy killed who's still laying behind me as I was videotaping it, and his wife lost her legs. He was the cookie salesman, the pastry salesman. Thankful there weren't any customers there yet. But that's an everyday thing. And Gorlovka's population before the war, and keep in mind, there is no water in Gorlovka because the Ukrainians early on blew up the main water mains. They blow up the pumps every time they get replaced. They blow them up again. Gorlovka's population in 2012, 2013 was 380,000 people. Gorlovka's population right now is 320,000 people. They won't leave. It's like, this is our land. And go to hell, we're not going anywhere. That's the Russian mentality. So when they think they're gonna, when you hear Marco Rubio say, oh, deep strikes are gonna bring them to the t no, that's actually having the exact opposite effect. The majority of people want deep strikes into Europe. If it was the will of the people at this point, we'd already be in a full conventional fighting war. That's and the Europeans don't understand that, or they're refusing to understand that, or they're
Well, they're
incapable of
counting.
understanding that.
I think they're counting on Putin's. Look, it's the same way the United States counts on Xi Jinping in China. They're playing the long game. They don't want a country. I look at Putin, he doesn't want any of this.
Oh, I know.
He allowed NATO to cross many red lines when it expanded to the east. Was only, this is finally he said, no, not Ukraine, right? Poland, okay, Czech, okay, but not Ukraine. So
Oh, Russia
they.
asked, from the Russian side, people don't understand, because the stereotypes of Russians are these aggressive psychopaths that just want to conquer everybody. Well, you know who proposed the League of Nations and was first pushing the League of Nations? It was Nicholas II. He wanted a new European security structure to avoid World War One, and anything like that, any wars in Europe. Russia's been pushing this for 140 years.
Yes,
And
of course.
unfortunately, we had World War One, we had World War Two, because Russia has been ignored. Stalin asked to join NATO in 48 when he found out it was being formed. He didn't quite get it at that point that it was being formed against him. That realization came a little bit later, because he wanted a new European security structure. Gorbachev asked to join NATO. I'm not Gorbachev, I'm sorry, Yeltsin, in 92. Putin asked to join NATO in 2000. And we are where we're at, unfortunately, but we are where we're at.
Yeah, no, it's a terrible, terrible, terrible situation. I'm very, very worried. Okay, sir. I have to go. It was very interesting talking to you. I hope that I have not been a
Oh,
depressive
no.
guest for you.
Quite the opposite. Quite the opposite. Well, you got to tell the people the truth. People are
Yeah.
adults. They have to
Otherwise,
face the truth.
what are we spending our time for here?
Oh,
That's true.
absolutely. And the media, you can always switch on television to hear lies and feel good. But that doesn't solve your daily issues. You gotta face up to the truth of
Can
it.
I ask you to send me a link when you're done with this? Because then we'll post it and we'll promote it too.
Absolutely. I will absolutely send the link. I'll post this in about 2 or 3 days. I'll get it up.
Yeah, just whenever it's ready, just send it, then we'll put it up.
Okay, absolutely.
Very good,
Thank you.
Scott.
Thank you
Yeah.
again. Yep. Cheers.
You too.
Hello, dear friends. Just want to remind you, if you like this video or you like what you hear, click like, subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet. Send it to your friends. Let's grow this channel. Maybe we can finally hit it up to 100,000. That'd be a good round number for the summer. So let me know, leave some comments, and give a thumbs up. So look forward to seeing you in the next video. Cheers.